groggily. Wherever Dr. Santo was, Ven Cochin was sure to follow. Anika wasn't sure she had the wits to confront Cochin at the moment. Thankfully, Dr. Santo shook his head.
The siblings called me. Said you fainted.
Only then did she realize it was completely dark outside, and the catheter dangling from the medical machine traced back into her arm. Nika shuddered, now sensing the extraneous fluid mingling with her blood. Her body bucked at the thought, and she moved to yank the cords from her skin, but Dr. Santo leaped up to stop her.
Careful now, he admonished. Let me take care of that.
Nika stiffened, hand still wrapped around the catheter. She hadn't been in the care of another in years, and never in a true physician's. But she relented, watching him round her bedside and take her IV.
Where are the siblings?
Nika asked, remembering Hendon. She hadn't stayed conscious long enough to see him wake, and worried what he'd be like when he did.
They're across the hall.
Dr. Santo removed the catheter with experienced hands. She barely felt a thing, and pressed a wad of gauze against her skin. She could have healed it herself, but she let herself be cared for by him, because that was such a rare feeling, to be healed by another.
Nika, he began, drawing her thoughts back. While you were asleep, there was a miracle.
Her eyes lit up in hopeful expectation. In her silence, he elaborated.
Hendon woke out of his coma.
He did? He's okay?
Nika asked, her breath shuddering, and realized that all the muscles of her shoulder had been tensed in anticipation.
He's better than we could have hoped for.
Dr. Santo's word choice was noncommittal, and her brow furrowed with concern. In a rush, he added,
It'll just take time.
A miracle, she murmured,
repeating his words from earlier. As Dr. Santo bandaged her arm, a part of her rejoiced that he would consider it such, that she had beaten him to the cure, and a part of her was disappointed that that's all he'd ever consider it. Just a miracle, not an act of heart-soothing.
Can I see him?
She asked, lifting herself out of bed as soon as Dr. Santo had patched her up. Without waiting for an answer, she tipped herself forward onto wobbling legs, searching for balance against the bedside. Dr. Santo quickly lent a hand, but she waved off his assistance, already feeling her strength return. An unfamiliar laugh came from the room across the hall. Nika staggered toward the door, still dressed in a nightgown. She sourced the laughter to Hendon's room. Then came more of it. Mimi's tinkling laugh, Andow's breathy one, Trin's quiet chuckle. Still, there was another's, deep and honeyed, one she knew, hoped, prayed, was Hendon's, but didn't confirm until she pushed open the door. There he was, dressed and sitting up in bed, face flushed pink with life. There were still things she saw to heal. His hands tremored as he held a teacup. He looked thinner now that he was out of blankets, cheeks sallow and skin waxy. But he was upright. Talking. Laughing. The room silenced as all eyes turned to her. Nika held Hendon's stare with the wariness of a street cat. But after a tense pause, Mimi broke the silence.
Nika!
She cried. And before Nika could greet her, she'd bounded across the room and wrapped her arms around her in a tight hug. Nika's chest collapsed, either from the strength of Mimi's embrace or the surprise of being touched, or from the relief that it had worked, and she'd healed a man, not through Thuman techniques, but through heart-soothing. Mimi pulled away, as though suddenly remembering decorum, and brushed smooth the wrinkles from her blouse. She cleared her throat, eyes suddenly bashful.
Thank you, Uncle Sean. We were all so worried.
Dr. Santo bowed his head in welcome.
It was just a fainting spell, it seems. A few days of rest should be all she needs.
Or a big breakfast, Nika thought. Everyone was still looking at her as though she were the miraculous recovery. But she stared directly at Hendon. She opened her mouth, trying to find the words to ask if he felt the impression of her touch, or if it was nothing more than medicine to him.
Swan ko Nika, I presume, he said instead, and she nodded. And Sean.
His words were lucid, at least, and his memory seemingly intact.
That's right, Hendon, Mimi said, beaming.
But Guan, he's...
Andow shook his head.
Gone.
Hendon thinned his lips into a frown.
I keep asking, hoping the answer will change, that I've remembered incorrectly.
And what do you remember, Hendon? Dr. Santo pulled a chair up to Hendon's bedside, taking a doctorly position as he had with Nika earlier. With a long sigh, Hendon shook his head, as if the act of recollecting pained him. With an ounce of panic, Nika worried she'd erased something in using Trin as a template, had left something unrepaired. But he responded,
Only bits and pieces, here and there.
Can you recall the year?
1016.
And the month?
The third.
And the events leading up to the accident? Hendon winced, a distant look coming over his eyes.
I don't remember every detail. In fact, it's all a bit hazy. But I know Guan and I were headed to the cat burrow for his exhibition. The cars wouldn't start, so I had the staff tack up the horses.
He paused, brow scrunched and bald head beaded with sweat.
I remember starting on the journey, but no more after that.
Do you remember going around the bend? Mimi pressed. That's where the carriage rolled.
Hendon's wrinkles deepened.
Maybe. Yes, you're right. I lost control of the horses. They sped.
Why? What spooked them?
He crushed his eyes shut.
A wolf, maybe? Or I might have heard a gunshot. A stray bullet. Hunters somewhere?
Nika frowned. In all her time living here, she'd never seen a wolf in the city.
Was it a stray bullet? Or an intentional one? Mimi persisted.
Mimi? Dr. Santo chided.
It's all right, Hendon. It'll come in time.
Hendon's fatigue returned suddenly, overtaking his earlier liveliness. But Nika knew that none of his ailments could be soothed away. Not the deep wrinkles in his forehead, nor the hollowness of his cheeks, nor the thinness of his wrists.
Mimi, is there something I don't understand?
Hendon asked, and she gave him a crestfallen look.
Well, We thought that...
Her voice trembled, nearing tears. Nika opened her mouth to finish the thought for her, but Dr. Santo was faster.
They suspect that Guan was murdered.
Murdered? Shock inflected Hendon's expression, weak considering his condition.
I'm sorry, Mimi. If you were hoping I would wake with any answers, I've disappointed you.
Nika watched Mimi's face, finding a combination of defeat and understanding. It should have been a good thing, hearing that their father hadn't been murdered. But there was sadness that came with the alternative, that it was just an accident. That, for all his wealth and ingenuity, their father could still be stolen from them by fate's whim. Death was, after all, the ultimate equalizer. Andow clapped his hands together, dispelling the solemnity that had settled with Hendon's words.
Perhaps we should go to sleep, he suggested,
trying in vain to put on an optimistic smile.
It's been an exciting night. I think we all deserve some rest.
With varying degrees of agreeability, they all nodded. After exchanging their good nights, the group dispersed, the siblings to their rooms, Nika to hers, and Dr. Santo to his home. Nika didn't realize how tired her bones were until she was back under her comforter, her muscles weak. Now that Hendon was healed, and the conspiracies had amounted to nothing substantial, that was the end of her involvement, wasn't it? Tomorrow, she would get her pay and prepare to leave this manor. That saddened her more than it should have. She let the heaviness in her chest drag her to sleep.
When Nika went down to the breakfast table the next morning, it felt as though the happenings of the manor had resumed after the funeral. Andow signed checks at the table, and Trin sifted through a stack of contracts, both ignoring their rice porridge. There was also the addition of Hendon, sitting in the seat that Nika normally took. Cautiously, she found a new space at the table, across from the rest of the family.
"Nika," Hendon said, straightening. "I wanted to thank you. The siblings told me what you did and what you are."
Nika frowned. "Oh, we're telling everyone now?" Mimi gave her an apologetic look.
"I just thought he should know who healed him.
When they told me it was a blood carver, I almost didn't believe it. I always thought that blood carvers didn't exist in Thumas, so it's been an honor."
"An honor?" That was new, and Nika realized this was the first time any of her clients had ever thanked her.
"Heartsoothe," she said, because she felt they deserved to know its true name. "In my culture, we call ourselves Heartsoothes."
They all looked at her appreciatively, and she could almost imagine herself here, sitting at this table, for many dinners to come, until Andow tapped his pen against the checkbook.
"Speaking of which, we should figure out the cost of your services," he said.
Her spirits fell at his formality.
"Right.
The original agreement was 1,000 chem, but considering how long you've spent with us, I think it's only appropriate to match it in price. 3 weeks at an average physician's salary. What is that, roughly 20,000 chem?
At that, her mouth hung open. 20,000 chem. An amount that she'd once only dreamed about. An amount that could keep her stomach full and blood fed for an entire year. She should have jumped at the sum, should have taken all that chem and sprinted from a manor that brought only funerals and speculations of murder. But instead, she felt her heart drop at its suggestion. The Kongmis had fed and welcomed her best they could. The Butcher's Row had been a rough start, but she realized she'd never wanted for anything more while she stayed here. As soon as she reintroduced the language of chem, this relationship would mirror the one she'd shared with all her previous clients, a transaction, and nothing more. Mimi tugged at her brother's cuff.
"Wait a minute, Andow. Have some consideration. Dr. Santo suggested she rest. Let's have her stay until at least the dinner party."
"Stay?" Nika echoed, ashamed at how her hopes leaped at the suggestion. And then, "Dinner party?" Andow nodded thoughtfully.
"An event to celebrate Hendon's recovery."
Nika gave him a skeptical look. "Are you sure that's the smartest idea? What with..." She wasn't sure why she was entertaining their conspiracies anymore, but Andow said,
"We live very public-facing lives. Such an event is expected."
"Besides, Hendon doesn't recall anything worrisome," Trin added.
"And if our suspicions still hold merit, perhaps the dinner will be enough to scare our perpetrator into showing themselves," Mimi finished.
So, they'd already discussed this together.
"Sounds dangerous," Nika thought aloud.
"Well, if anything happens, we do know a heart soothe we can employ."
Nika wanted to warn them that there were some afflictions she couldn't heal, death being one of them. The siblings seemed to be getting a little too comfortable using her ability as a cure-all. But all the more reason for her to stay, right?
"I'd be happy to stick around," she said, flashing an eager grin.
She glanced at Trin, expecting him to make some skeptical comment, but he only smiled. Andow closed his checkbook.
"If that's the case, Mimi, can you send for the tailor for her dress?"
"I'll take care of it."
"Out of curiosity," Nika interjected, "who might be in attendance?"
"Those who know Hendon," Andow said. "Father's business associates and family friends."
"And certain physician's aides?" Nika wanted to ask, but she didn't, thinking instead of the heart-soothe books on her nightstand. She had unresolved business among this company. And his name was Ven Cochin. 15. In the week leading up to the dinner, the manor saw unending activity. Business associates walking in and out of Andow's office, tailors coming to take measurements and test color swatches against Nika's golden brown skin, and staff scrambling to ready meals and tea for guests. Swanko Nika returned to life, and now she was glad she had cemented her backstory for how often she made small talk with visitors. Only then did she understand why the siblings valued discretion so much. This manor hardly felt like it belonged to them now that it had resumed full business. Today, the staff polished the halls and cleared the office space in preparation for a scheduled appointment with Nem. Nika caught snippets of gossip in the air. The man had a reputation of abrasiveness, so Andow's office quarters were void of staff when he finally did come, carrying with him an aura of authority. Not even Trin accompanied Andow and Nem in the office, and Nika found him lingering just down the hall, pacing back and forth, brow creased with anxiety. He only ceased when he caught sight of her.
"Here to eavesdrop again, are you?" he asked.
"No," she lied. "Why aren't you with him?"
"I should be," he said quickly,
then sucked in a breath as though those words had slipped past him. More deliberately, he added,
"I support Andow in everything I can, but there are some things he needs to do alone."
"What is he going to say to Nem?" Trin let out a slow sigh, shaking his head.
"I'm not sure if even he knows that yet."
He let his shoulders fall, the tension loosening from the sharp ridge of his jaw, and said,
"I've actually been meaning to talk to you."
From his flat tone, Nika wasn't sure what to prepare for, a lecture or a request. Trin continued,
"I wanted to say..."
He cleared his throat, as though the rest of his sentence had lodged there.
"I wanted to say thank you. I hadn't gotten much of a chance earlier, but it's been long overdue."
"A thank you from Trin?" Nika cocked her brow, waiting for the other shoe to drop.
"And..."
These words seemed to pain him even more than the last.
"I'm sorry for the way I treated you when you first arrived at the manor. I should never have treated you with anything but civility."
A thank you and an apology? Perhaps her soothing had broken him after all. "Thank you," she returned, "for letting me use you as a template to heal Hendon. It was brave."
"No, it wasn't."
He shook his head, lips thin.
"Or, I mean, it shouldn't have been. Because I think, deep down, I knew you wouldn't do me harm."
Nika had to smile at his honesty. She also had to wonder where it was all coming from. Trin, of everyone in the manor, had always been the most reserved around her. "You know, Dr. Santo mentioned something funny to me," she began, recalling a conversation from long ago. "He said that you'd once tried to steal from Mr. Kongmi." She watched his expression, waiting for any reaction. As expected, his expression yielded little, other than the hint of a smirk.
"Did he?"
"He said that Mr. Kongmi caught you, and instead of sending you to a juvenile cell where your law-breaking self belonged, he made the questionable decision of putting you through college."
"Those were Dr. Santo's exact words?"
"I'm paraphrasing."
"Well?"
Trin shifted, sticking gloved hands into his pockets.
"It's true."
Nika always knew it had to be, but her mouth still fell open with surprise.
"Nika, I can tell that you want to stay here, and I understand where you're coming from, because I was there too, once upon a time. Walking in on all this luxury and comfort, watching this unbroken family from afar, and never thinking it could be mine. But Mr. Kongmi was kind, and so are his children. If you want to stay, we can make it happen."
Nika watched him with new regard. He'd read her like an open book when she thought she'd been so closed, and hope rose at his words, until he added,
"But it has to be honest work, of course. No more secret gifts and sneaking around."
With that, her spirits fell. Trin was right that he was just like her. but there was one thing he'd never be able to understand. The need to use a gift like heart-soothing. He could clean himself up, throw on a suit and dress pants, get a university education, and be a perfect addition to the Kongmi family. Nika, on the other hand, no matter how much makeup and silk she put on, how far up her arms she pulled these gloves, Nika would never be able to change the fact that she was a heart-soothe. Despite that, she had the favor of the most influential family in Thumis, and a position in Dr. Santo's lab awaited her after all this. Was that enough to find a place here? Heart-soothing and all? Because he'd given her his honesty, she gave him some in return. I appreciate it, Trin. I really do. These past few weeks have been the first time I haven't felt alone in a long time. That has been worth more to me than the Chem. Though, you're still going to pay me.
Of course.
After the dinner party is sorted out, maybe I could... Before she could finish her sentence, the door to Andau's study burst open. This time, Nem had no alcohol in which to blame his rage, but it rolled off him in waves.
War is coming, Andau,
he said, the threat in his voice loud enough to carry down the hall.
We'll see if you change your tune when you have something to lose.
Nika figured Andau must have refused to endorse his war. Nem stalked down the hall toward them, and Nika, never so afraid of anyone, drew behind Trin by instinct.
I'll escort you to your auto carriage, Trin offered in a palliative tone, and led Mr. Nem down the hall.
As they turned the corner, Nika caught Nem's eyes, finding a tumult of displeasure pounding behind them. Then he rounded the corner and disappeared from view. Nika glanced back at the door of the study, which remained as open as an invitation. Maybe Andau meant for Trin to come in. Instead, she took it upon herself in Trin's absence. Just inside, Andau sat with his chair swiveled toward the window. She knocked, and he promptly turned around, looking like he expected someone else. Nem sounded angry, she said, if only to shatter the heavy silence between them. Andau waved a hand like he was trying to force indifference. The tightness of his shoulders betrayed him.
Mr. Nem has a hot temper, but he never sits on his grudges for long.
I take it you turned down his offer? He nodded, then gestured for her to have a seat. She made herself comfortable in one of his armchairs. I told him that I could not, in good conscience, use my pacifist father's capital to fund a war campaign. Ah, she said, and the silence settled again. He seemed deflated in that chair, trying to fill a seat too large for him. For a moment, neither of them said anything, and Nika wondered why her feet had taken her in here. To console? To gather more secrets? Then Andau asked, Does your culture believe in an afterlife? She glanced up at him. He'd never paid much interest to her personal life before, even when they invented her background. It had always been business between the two of them. Yes, she replied. But Nika wasn't sure if she believed in one.
I'm glad I don't, he admitted. I don't know if I could live with the idea of father seeing me now.
Why's that? He took a moment to find his words.
I lost him so quickly, and so unexpectedly, that I never had a chance to ask him how I was meant to carry on his memory.
His words touched on a depth of sadness Nika understood so intimately, because hadn't she lost her grandma the same way? All she had left was a cobbled-together form of heart-soothing, one her grandma might never have approved of. Nika was almost surprised to find those feelings mirrored in Andau, who was so Thuman, where she was so Yarongese. I would imagine your father didn't create his empire just so you could carry on his memory. Maybe he gave you all of this so you had the freedom to live for yourself. He gave her a thoughtful look, as though surprised to find such words coming out of a blood carver's mouth.
Maybe so.
Sometimes, it's just that his legacy feels so much larger than me, than my wants and whims. He sighed, a tacit request to table the conversation. Trin returned at that moment, knocking on the door to draw their attention.
Are you all right, Andao?
He asked, brows laced with concern. Andao's apprehension melted.
I am now.
It seemed she was forgotten. Nika took that as her prompt to leave, passing Trin on her way out of the office. She caught a snippet of their conversation just before she drew out of earshot.
You did the right thing, love.
It was an easy choice with you beside me. But Mr. Nem is right. I don't know how I'd act in a world where you were endangered. A breathy laugh.
Hey, aren't I the one meant to protect you?
So that was love then? Nika thought. The things we protect, and the people we can't live without? She pondered it as she walked away. Hendon's celebratory dinner loomed on the horizon. Between the bustle of cooks preparing the banquet and the clamor of servants tidying the house, the week came to a quick end, and the Kongmis opened their foyer and dining rooms to a moderate company of aristocrats. Where guests had once dressed in black and white funeral attire, now they came in dazzling gowns and prim suits, and Nika saw, for the first time since she'd arrived in the back of the hearse, the highest echelon of fashion their money could afford. Women wore headdresses like crowns, as though the very sun were setting upon their hair, and their dresses were threaded in gold and silver. Those in suits wore them with taste, the buttons and cuffs emblazoned with seals of their family name, their company, or whatever piece of their industry they particularly wanted to show off tonight. Everyone took liberties with their gloves, too. Some patterned like snakes or dragons, coiling up the arm, others sheer and laced, having forgotten the original intention of gloves, and a few of them feathered and bejeweled, as much a part of a cohesive outfit as jewelry or shoes might have been. She thought she'd fit in tonight, wearing the dress Mimi had gotten tailored for her, dark red, high-collared, and slit tastefully at the hip to reveal the lustrous purple of her pants. But her gown still looked humble compared to others. With no need to imitate mourning on this occasion, no one had held back an ounce of extravagance. As she descended the stairs into the midst of the company, Nika's eyes scanned the crowd, looking for that familiar sweep of hair, the midnight eyes, the smile that was half charm, half wit. Ven Cochin. She didn't find him before she reached the main foyer, slipping into the crowd. Instead, she found many guests who had attended the funeral, hardly recognizable behind their new makeup and finery. There was Mr. Ngut, speaking with Andao over finger foods, and then Dr. Santo, entertaining some of the Kongmi's younger cousins as their parents stole away for a glass of rice wine. Even Mr. Nem was in attendance, and Andao must have been right about the capriciousness of his grudges. He seemed placated here, taking advantage of the open bar. But no Cochin. Just then, the hum of conversation and laughter quieted, and Nika followed everyone's gazes up to the mezzanine. Hendon stood at the top, gloved hand curled aggressively around the banister as he struggled down the stairs. Trin was beside him, shouldering his weight with each step, and as they reached the bottom of the stairs, the crowd swelled to greet them. There were a series of congratulations and you look wells, but as everyone was watching Hendon, Nika was watching the guests.
I suppose I was wrong, came a familiar voice beside her, and Nika whirled to find Cochin standing there, as though he'd materialized out of thin air.
In place of his usual vest suit, he wore a midnight blue tunic, beautifully embroidered in silver. Nothing so flashy as other guests, but simply elegant. She imagined, then, a fox mask fitted over his sharp jaw, a black robe thrown over those shoulders. The image aligned all too well. Nika steeled herself. She tried so hard to look for him, but it would seem he found her first.
To which instance are you referring? There are too many to count.
Girls in rags can walk into silk overnight, he smiled, falsely charming. And they can wear it as though it suits them.
It does suit me, she said. Cochin's eyes narrowed as they glided over her dress.
Yes, it does.
Somehow, even his compliments felt like hidden jabs.
I expected to find you here,
she said, trying to be every ounce as ominous as he always was. I've been meaning to talk to you. Looking more eager than put off, he tilted his head toward a quiet corner for conversation, a hallway offshoot from the foyer. She let him guide her there, but no farther. Nika would not let him get her alone on his pretense. The books, Nika said, folding her arms. They were in Yarongese. This may come as a surprise, but I can't read Yarongese.
You can read pictures, can't you?
Couldn't make heads or tails of them.
I thought you might find them interesting anyway.
What gave you that impression?
A hunch.
They were both playing games now. They both knew what those books were, but neither would say it aloud. I can't very well understand them, so they're worthless to me, she lied, though it pained her to spurn the very objects that had made her feel found. Where did you find them, anyway?
I collect things, he said, shrugging innocently.
Things like heart soothes, she wondered.
Consider them a gift.
Cochin was layered in discrepancy, flirting with heart-soothe accusations, but forgoing gloves as if Nika weren't one, pushing her out of high society through cryptic words and concealed warnings, but seeking her out at every opportunity, giving her heart-soothe books, as damning as any accusation, and acting as if they were nothing more than a gift.
Why? She pressed, her eyes drilled into him. Why did you give me those books, Cochin?
She was past the games, her desperation showing in the strain of her voice. Like a mask dropped, his expression hardened, the softness of his charm melted away from his eyes, his smile. Nika might have been afraid if not for the reassuring proximity of the party, but there came a verity in his eyes that was almost relieving. It was a promise that no matter how he played with his words, his next ones were truthful.
Because you needed them.
Her heart stalled. Was that an indictment? The fox mask had never looked more fitting over his face, because how else could he know what she was with such certainty?
Needed them?
For what? She put on her best guise of innocence, but wondered if it was futile. Instead of any heart-soothe allegations, he said,
to remind you that you don't belong here, that beneath this dress, no matter how ornate or expensive, there's some unchangeable part of you that this society will never accept. Whatever you may think of me, I don't mean it as an insult.
It was the most she'd ever gotten from him, and he said it with such surety, as if he'd seen the rise and fall of those like her before, as if her estrangement from the world of manners and banquets was already a foregone conclusion. Nika wanted to ask how he could be so confident that he knew her when he was Thuman aristocracy and she was a Yarongese heart-soothe. When he could be Dr. Santo's aide, healing the way Thumis accepted healers, while she had to hide her art behind homeopathy. When he might be tired of this city, these glittering people and their shining inventions, but she still yearned to break in.
I'll try not to take it as one, she said. And she must not have sounded all too convincing, because his brows knit with a subtle disappointment.
Cochin shook his head, the candor in his expression drawing back.
If you truly don't want those books, I'll take them back.
He borrowed a napkin and a pen from a passing waitress. Using his palm as a writing surface, he scrawled something down on the napkin.
But not during work hours. Tomorrow, 16th hour. This address.
He held out the napkin, and she hesitated to take it when she saw the address. 223 Gento Street, Pigborough. A city away from the pearlescent dragon burrow, sitting next to her very own dog burrow. A place where she would not expect a boy who could afford suits like his. At last, she took it, and his thumb slipped over her fingers, keeping her gloved hand for a moment in his bare one.
Nika, he said, his voice lowering. If there is anything you have left that you don't want to lose, you'll take my words to heart.
Her breath hitched in her throat as he drew back his hand. She clutched the napkin in her palm, finding the ink already bleeding near illegibility. A shout from the party interrupted her. It was a half-drunk Dr. Santo,
his audience of children growing as he waved Cochin over.
"Duty calls," Cochin said, giving her a deep bow.
As he straightened, his eyes held hers for a fraction too long, drawing her in with the same gravity of nebulae. Then Ven Cochin dipped back into the crowd and disappeared. Long after guests had gone, after the servants had swept and polished the foyer and dining room, Nika sat awake on her bed in night silks, turning Cochin's napkin over in her palm. By now, she had Cochin's loopy scrawl memorized, 223 Gento Street, Pigborough, a borough in southeast Thumis popular for its outdoor markets and street food carts, but certainly not for its luxury. So why did Cochin want to meet there? Finding no new answers in the napkin, Nika tucked it away on the nightstand and herself under the covers. She hadn't gotten far into drowsiness when a pained scream pierced the air. In seconds, she was on her feet, following the cry to Hendon's room. The door was unlocked, and she burst inside, only to find Hendon still in bed, the covers thrown to the floor. Rushing to his side, she looked for any sign of forced entry. When she found none, she looked for any injury on him. Nothing but a gleam of sweat across his skin, the intense furrow of his brow. He let out another cry, and she realized it was not an intruder, but a night terror. "Hendon," she said, rattling his shoulder. "Wake up." He didn't rouse, and she placed a hand on both shoulders to give him a solid shake. "Wake up." His eyes flew open, and his limbs flailed, a limp fist catching her across the jaw. She stumbled backward against his wooden room divider. He panicked against phantom assailants, arms thrashing with surprising strength. "Hendon, it's me, Nika," she said, but that seemed only to inflame his frenzy. He cowered from her on his bed, breath hiking up in speed.
"No, please, don't touch me,"
he managed between gasps. And Nika was hurt until she saw his delirium. He was addressing something beyond her, apparitions in the night.
"You're in the Kongmi Manor. You're safe," she said, and only then did lucidity creep into his eyes.
Everything about him settled, but for his chest, still heaving with breaths, and he drew himself upright through wooden motions. With growing alertness, he assessed the room, the blanket on the floor, his abused pillows, and Nika standing pressed against the wall.
"Nika?"
he said, as though he didn't recognize the name. Then, more surely,
"Nika!
Are you okay, Hendon?" Again, she feared a mistake in her own heart-soothing, feared the consequences of experimentation her grandmother had always warned her about. But Hendon seemed to be coming slowly into clarity, blinking away his nightmares. She still kept her distance, wary of another stray fist.
What happened?" he asked.
"It was just a dream." He shook his head vehemently, his brow knit with labor.
"No, not a dream. Blood, a wound in my chest, and you, standing there."
Her lips thin, Nika shook her head, feeling almost mournful. Were these scattered memories her doing?
"I wasn't there, Hendon."
He pressed his eyes shut.
"But I thought I saw—"
His words came out nearly delirious, on the edge of mania.
"A wolf!"
"A wolf?" When Hendon opened his eyes, they held dread.
"Someone was there, the night Gwan died. Someone in a mask. But not a wolf. It was a fox."
16. All in night linens and varying states of drowsiness, the Kongmis, Trin, and Nika collected around Hendon's bed. They brought him tea and warm towels, listening intently as he began again with growing clarity.
"We started around the bend, when a gunshot spooked the horses off trail," he said, each word laborious. "I was flung from the seat. The carriage continued, rolled down the hill. Everything started going black, and...
And you saw a man in a fox mask, Nika said.
He narrowed his eyes at his cup, as though trying to find answers in his tea leaves.
I never said it was a man.
She swallowed. That was her own conjecture, because she knew exactly who had been at the scene. But she hesitated to reveal to the Kongmis just what she knew and who she suspected. That meant detailing all of Cochin's hidden threats and snide remarks, and she worried they might not find anything wrong with the Thuman trying to push her out of high society. She needed proof first. Accusations came later.
I knew it, Mimi said. I knew it! There was someone else at the scene, someone who wanted Father dead. It was more than an accident.
But why go to the lengths of a mask if they were going to frame it as an accident? Trin wondered aloud.
Maybe it's as we thought. Someone we know. Perhaps someone recognizable. Someone who didn't want to take the chance of being found out.
Andow speculated.
Then why leave a survivor?
Does it matter? Mimi interrupted. Hendon has just confirmed what we've all been fearing. Father was murdered. Everything in the room settled for a moment, even dust, as her declaration sank into the hardwood. For the Kongmis, surely the revelation brought more questions than answers. But Nika had never been so sure of anything. Ven Cochin was the man behind the fox mask, and now he was also Mr. Kongmi's murderer. It was too perfect. How else would he know what she was? Why else would he give her those books and seek her out, at every opportunity, despite her antagonism? Why else would he mock her, warn her, threaten her? She thought back on all their conversations, the words she'd once misconstrued as weapons of an arrogant aide. Now she saw them for the message they were. Leave the Kongmis, this society, this city. Leave the murder alone, Hendon comatose. Leave, before she healed the last witness of his crime. Well, now she had, and Cochin knew full well that Hendon was awake. At the party, he'd warned her to escape if she had anything left that she didn't want to lose. Nika wondered if he was referring to her life. Suddenly, her meeting with him tomorrow made sense. The Pigborough was not a place for aristocratic boys in vest suits, but it was a place where a heart sooth might go missing, and no one would bat an eye.
Do you know who it was, Hendon?
Andow asked, breaking the silence. Hendon squeezed his eyes shut, wincing as though reliving the memory.
I don't know. Maybe. There was this feeling, something so familiar. The person behind the mask. I know her, I think.
Her? Mimi asked.
Something sure set into Hendon's features as he opened his eyes.
Yes, I remember now. The person behind the fox mask. It was...
His gaze met Nika's, filled with new apprehension.
It was you!
Nika's throat dried as everyone whipped their attention around.
He's confused, she stammered. Hendon, I told you I wasn't there.
Under the heat of their stares, she staggered backward, once again excised from the family.
You're right,
Hendon said, looking pained.
I must be misremembering.
Some of the scrutiny lifted from Andow and Trin, but Mimi's stare was unyielding.
How curious, the girl said, narrowing her eyes as though mulling something new.
Mimi? Nika said, her tone cautionary.
I promise, I had nothing to do with the accident. Maybe it was my heart soothing, implanted false memories, or something. I don't know.
You knew our father was murdered before we ever told you. I overheard your conversation.
Now that I think about it, what landed you in the Butcher's Row to begin with?
Listen to yourself, Nika snapped, bitterness rising in her throat. I healed him. Why would I wake him if I'd killed your father?
That seemed to quiet Mimi. Though she didn't raise any more arguments, Nika saw a flicker of doubt in her eyes, in the slightest furrow of her brow,
and it was enough to spark indignation. Nika had spent weeks toiling to wake Hendon, only to be repaid with an accusation of murder. She looked to Hendon, to Trin, to Andow, but none of them came to her defense, and she was reminded of how contractual their relationship, how flimsy the trust between them. Trin had offered her a stay, but there was no place for her here. Perhaps Cochin had been right. No matter what she did, this society, this family, would never truly accept her. Trin stepped forward, shattering some of the ice between her and Mimi.
"It was a nightmare, nothing more," he said, his tone definitive. "We'll all sleep on it and see if the memory still sticks in the morning."
The tension remained in the room, even as they shuffled around. Mimi eyed Nika, and Nika eyed Hendon. Beneath her frustration at him, he'd returned her kindness with doubt. There was fear that she'd done something erroneous in healing him, miswiring his anatomy or leaving his memory shattered. Her head swarmed with worries as she returned to her room. Nika stopped in front of her bed, where a napkin lay atop the nightstand. 223 Gento Street. Earlier, she debated going. Now she had to, because the only way to convince Mimi of her innocence was to find Mr. Comey's true killer, and she knew exactly who it was. Tomorrow, she would see who awaited her at 223 Gento Street. Ven Cochin, physician's aide, or the man behind the fox mask. Nika woke with a sense of finality. Already, it was noon, and she collected herself in the hours that remained. All the while, she avoided the Comeys and Trin. Not a difficult task in such a large manner. The next time she faced them, it'd be with their masked man. Still, Mimi's accusation had sank in its teeth, and it clung to her like a leech. When the time neared, she threw on a quick robe, sashed around the waist. In the pig burrow, she would stand out in silks. Afterward, she made her way to the Kongmi's kitchens, overturning drawers and cabinets until she found a paring knife, just a few inches long, that she fit into her boot, just in case. When she returned to her room, she lingered by the door, looking over the space she'd called home for the last few weeks. It was a well-loved place, the bed in a constant unmade state, and her clothes piled over the back of an armchair. The realization came bitterly that, depending on who it was she found in the pig burrow, she might not come back to this place. Nika paused at the desk. For a moment, her fingers twitched toward the pen and notepad, wondering if it was wise to leave a message, if Cochin was who she believed, and if he could best even her heart-soothing. Did she want the siblings to know where she'd gone off and died? Or did she want to follow her family, disappearing from the city like the crest of a wave, there one moment, and gone the next? She decided against it. She was not dying today. With little ceremony, Nika left, carrying the bag of heart-soothe books over her shoulder. The knife rubbed against her ankle with every step, a comfort despite her chafing skin. She took the trolley, slotting a coin into the fare-collecting automaton, which lifted its gate to grant her access. By streetcar, no burrow was too far from another, not even the dragon from the pig burrow. As was everything in Thumis, there was a method to the burrows, and Nika observed their strata as she passed through each in turn. The modern buildings of the cat and tiger burrows, in a process of northern expansion. The industrial brick of the ox, drawing the line between upper and lower city. The stained facades of the rat, its tight-packed homes showing the first signs of saltwater damage. And finally, the pig burrow. Wide roads and stone-walled lawns had turned into narrow streets, where homes were stacked atop storefronts, and broken automatons sat abandoned on doorsteps, their hulls repurposed as cigarette receptacles. Despite their dinginess, these parts came with a sense of comfort, crowds she could disappear in, and buildings that looked as weathered as she did, so Nika didn't fear standing out. But a physician's aide, and certainly one as pretty as Cochin, had no place here.
She hopped off at a stop in front of a pawn shop, checking the address. The streets were intuitive, and she found herself at the right intersection with ease. From there, she followed the numbers in ascending order. As she continued, the low, squat bars around her gave rise to towering, cantankerous shophouses, crammed together with little regard for architectural congruity. Broken shutters and cracked colonnades faced the street, bleached by the sun, while languid markets sat at the base of the shophouses, their patrons few and far between. This was where the address led, to a particularly downtrodden pink house wedged between two others. Nika checked the number on the shophouse. This was a familiar scene, standing before a stranger's house, not knowing what to expect. The only thing missing was her bag of tinctures and high spirits, replaced by heart-soothe books and aching dread. Nika lifted her boot, grabbing the knife and shifting it against her wrist, where she concealed it in her sleeve. She eyed the street clock again. It was a couple minutes past the 16th hour. Hitching her breath, she strode forward and knocked on the door. A moment passed, then two. After being eyed by some of the neighbors, Nika considered turning around and leaving, but a lock clicked and the door opened to reveal Cochin. He was in business attire. She narrowed her eyes, fingers wrapping around the knife. Today, he wore gloves. "You came," he said, and she found her own trepidation mirrored in his voice. His eyes glimpsed her hands, but the knife was hidden in her sleeve. "Were you hoping I wouldn't?" she asked, glancing about the shophouse. Over his shoulder, she could see the emptiness of the shop, whose peeling counter stood empty. At that, he managed the slightest smile. "No, but you'll have to excuse the location. Sometimes I find the dragon burrow suffocating." Her fingers twitched with anticipation at how he curdled that last word with displeasure. He turned to welcome her inside. She stepped into the shop, following him as he took her to a door at the back that opened to stairs. These, compared to the rest of the house, were well-maintained, but the lonesome door at the top promised tragedy. He walked ahead of her, while she stared at the nape of his neck, where skin showed between his collar and his hair. Her thumb rubbed circles against the hilt of the knife in her sleeve, prepared to use it, if need be. All she needed was a sign, any confirmation of malevolence. Cochin opened the door for her at the top. His expression was grim. She knew her own mirrored it. Was there still a charade between them? Or did they both understand what this meeting was intended to be? A confrontation between a murderer and his loose end? As she stepped inside, the noxious smell of too many animals in too small a space disarmed her senses. Birds came alive at their arrival, and now she saw the room was a stark miniature of the butcher's row. Caged animals lined the walls, a variety of mice in glass terrariums, and birds in aviaries, and guinea pigs circling their pens. But none of these animals were rare or illicit. They were the variety found in a common corner pet shop. She was the strangest thing here. Then she spotted it, hanging from the coat hook, a mask, painted in the style of traditional theater. A fox. Nika heard the door close behind her, but she stayed deathly still, even as the sound of the lock slid into place. Her heart hammered in her chest, her knuckles white around the hilt of the knife. "You know, don't you?" he said, his voice eerily calm. Nika dropped the bag of books where she stood. Though she didn't turn to look, she could feel his heat just a couple bounds away, and she flipped her knife out of her sleeve. "You killed Mr. Comey," she said, giving words to his insinuation. "Deny it," she begged. Some part of her, despite the dangling fox mask and the meeting and the heart-soothe books, hoped to find a different tune in these notes, a melody that spelled innocence for Cochin and her both. Let those heart-soothe books be a gift and nothing more. Let his words be taken at face value, a physician's aid who'd grown tired of his gilded life and warned her about the same. Let him be innocent, because he'd known what she was all this time, and still planted the kiss on her hand when they'd first met. She waited for what felt an eternity, the silence stretching the distance between them. But he didn't deny a thing. That was all she needed. Her fingers clenched around her knife as she whirled around to face him, eyes homing in on the space between his ribs. He was faster. From his robe, he drew a pistol, halting her as he aimed at her chest. She froze with her hand outstretched, the knife a plaything when contesting his pistol. The evening light ringed around the barrel, and she saw his dark eyes behind it.
"Nika, I don't want to hurt you," he warned, thumb fingering the hammer as a threat. But he hadn't cocked it yet, and that gave her time.
"Put the knife down."
"Put the gun down."
Nika leveled a glare at him, drawing up anger to conceal the fear needling through her skin. He returned her stare with steeliness, a muscle twinging in his jaw.
"I tried to push you away from this."
"But you couldn't." Her voice was tremulous, but it was anger, not fear, that rasped at her throat. Somehow, this felt inevitable, an early and violent death, hidden between the walls of the pig burrow. But by his hand? Spittle on the grave.
"I can't let you return to the Kongmis," he said.
"Are you going to kill me then?"
Cochin sucked in a breath.
It was all the opening she needed. Nika lunged toward him, ducking beneath the aim of the gun and redirecting his arm. He stumbled in a moment's surprise as she drove the knife forward. His gloved hand caught her wrist, but not firmly enough. Her knife slipped further, where it sank into his abdomen. Letting out a pained gasp, Cochin staggered backward until she slammed him against the wall, the knife plunging deeper. His fingers wrapped around her knife hand, warring for a grip on the hilt, but she held fast. They were a mess of elbows and limbs, her fingers vying for the gun, until at last she swatted it from his grip. It skittered across the floor, just out of their reach. Nika eyed the sliver of his neck. She snapped out a hand, but he caught her wrist, grunting as her knife slipped deeper into his gut.
"I will not die by you, Ven Cochin," she seethed.
Even as the knife drew deeper, she feared he'd overtake her at the first opportunity. With gritted teeth, he tightened his grip, one hand around her wrist and the other fighting her blade. For all the blood carver rumors and for all Nika's threats, she'd never taken a human life before. Despite everyone she'd injured and endangered, killing Cochin with the same art she'd used to heal Hendon felt like a violation, like a revocation of her title, Heartsooth, like an indictment of a different one, Blood Carver. But she would not let Ven Cochin kill her here. She twisted the knife. Cochin's eyes flared in agony, and he sucked in another breath, grip slackening for only a moment. Nika overpowered him then, fingers latching around his neck, her victorious smile a reminder of what she could do with a touch, of what she was. Blood Carver. Her influence seeped into him, dropped down his throat, curled around his chest. As she tightened her fingers, so too did her influence tighten around his heart, eliciting a stutter there, a threat backed by blood.
"Give me one reason not to kill you here," she demanded, a scowl carved in her lips.
His expression was laced in pain, but there was no fear there. Instead, his eyes were almost calm.
"I can't let you end up like me."
"A murderer?" No, this was not an act of murder. This was self-defense. She could kill him in an instant. A halted heartbeat, the organs squeezed to burst, or his lungs shriveled clean of air. But her influence stalled with the cadence of his pulse, and Nika hesitated with her grip around his heart. A question remained unanswered, keeping her fingers from crushing down on his neck. Why? Why keep Hendon alive at the crime scene, but kill her? Why lend her those books when he knew she might use them? Why wait until now to kill her, when Hendon was already awake? Curiosity be damned, she would not take the risk and die here. Nika closed her influence around his heart and found that she couldn't. She drew a sharp breath of surprise,
feeling the presence of something new, a second influence, contesting her own. Before she could act, a visceral sensation flooded her fingertips where they curled around his throat, her hand steeped in warmth. It spread up her arm, coursing through her bones and climbing into her muscle. It advanced across tendon and sinew, leeching up her shoulder and washing through her chest. There, it quelled the drumming of her heart and eased the tightness of her shoulders. Nika felt the instinct to fight it, but it was all the comfort of being held, all the relief of letting her aching muscles rest. It was a familiar feeling, a memory pulled from a childhood she'd forgotten, her heart-soothing lessons, where her grandmother had soothed her muscle by muscle, bone by bone, until Nika had learned to do it herself. Cochin was soothing her. With a jerk, Nika yanked herself away. His influence snatched back with their sudden disconnect. It took her a moment to blink out of her stupor, but by the time she did, Cochin had retrieved his pistol. Again, he aimed it at her chest, but his expression was anything but murderous. It was a fragile, devastated thing, lips scrawled in a grimace and eyebrows knit. His hand was clamped around the wound in his abdomen, but he didn't move to heal it. "You're..." Nika let out a breath. The sentence didn't finish itself. That flaming anger from earlier had eaten itself to embers now, leaving only the ashes of heartache. Because at long last, here he was, a heart soothed like herself, but he stood on the other side of the gun. "You must hate me," he said. Torment carved itself into his haggard expression, and now she saw the pain to be genuine. "I didn't bring you out here to kill you, but I can't have you exposing me to the Kongmis. Do you see my predicament?" He would kill her to hide his secret. She would turn him in to absolve herself. A predicament indeed. "Does it mean nothing to you what we are?" Her voice came out small, surprising even herself. She wanted him to lower the gun, not because she was afraid of dying, but because she didn't want him to be her killer. Because at long last, she wasn't alone. His arm faltered, his lips pressed together with a withheld thought. She watched his eyes for her verdict, finding a tempest behind his clouded irises. His lips remained parted with a half-formed word for just a moment before they closed again. No words? Here she was, at the end of her rope, and he had nothing more to offer her? "Shoot me then, but don't aim for the chest. Aim between my eyes. Make it quick, and I won't try to soothe myself." She spat the words out like bitter medicine, and she saw the fracture in his expression. She lowered her arms, dropping her knife to the floor. A new fatigue dragged its way through her muscles, which still tingled with the longing for his influence again. Now she no longer wanted to fight him. No longer needed to know why he'd done it. Nika only wanted him